Well, good morning again, and I greet each one in Jesus' name, the creator of heaven and earth and all that is in it, and thankful that we can worship together in the name of Jesus, that name that is above all names. We're going to continue our lessons from the Bible and the bees, and I would invite the children forward again for another children's class. If you'd like to come forward, come on up. All right, lots of future beekeepers here. Wonderful. Told you last evening, quite a few of you I recognize from last evening, so I said I would ask you this morning, if you could remember the verse we talked about. You all knew Psalm 23:1 that says, "The Lord is my," what was that one?
Shepherd.
Shepherd, good. But in Psalm 121, David said, "The Lord is thy
keeper."
Good job, keeper. There's a lot of children in the world don't know about that verse, but God is our keeper. He cares for us just like a beekeeper helps care for the bees. I hope you've learned a few more things about the bees, and today we're going to continue that. Some more facts and then some lessons. So we didn't look through the whole hive yesterday. We'll look perhaps a little more here. This morning I think we had looked at maybe this frame. Remember, we saw the little baby bees come in there. We've got some I just about knocked all the bees off, didn't I? Got some cap cells there. Those are bees that are just about ready to hatch. And then down in here, it's a little hard to see, but you can see some cells down here have white in them. Those are little tiny eggs. The queen laid the egg, but they haven't even turned into a pupa yet. I know that's kind of hard to see. I have some bigger pictures this morning. I would like to explain to you the life cycle of a bee. Here's a blown-up picture taken from the side. You can see how they cut open the honeycomb. See the six-sided honeycomb? This first picture here is an egg. Now, you know that the frame is actually only, we looked at the honeycomb yesterday, right? Remember how small those holes are? Each of those little honeycomb, they're very small. So this is a big picture. And at the very bottom, you can see that tiny little egg. If I was looking at this honeycomb and a bee had actually laid eggs in there, I sort of need glasses, but I haven't. I'm kind of denying it. And so I would hold it out like this, and I would make the sun shine over my shoulder, and I would squint, and I would kind of hold it in and out, because it's really hard to see, because it's like a tiny little grain of rice that the queen lays down there. It's like a little grain of rice standing on its head at the bottom of the cell. It's just a little tiny white dot. But here you can see it much better. So every bee starts out as a tiny little egg. Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
And then it turns into this larva, grows bigger and bigger till it's a pupa. And it starts to finishes developing, and then it comes crawling out like this. They chew off the wax, and they come crawling out. And so I when I see this happening, I say, oh, look, a baby bee's being born. It's not quite the same as how we're born, but it's coming out of its little comb where it was laid as an egg. Isn't that neat? So there's a newborn, and this, by the way, is a drone. Who remembers what a drone is? A boy bee, yeah. And do boy bees sting?
No.
No, okay, good. You'll remember that, right? All right, only the girl bees sting. Do boy bees work hard? No, they don't. You'll remember that, won't you? All right. So here's the drone then. He's starting to crawl around. He's still kind of fuzzy when they first come out. They're kind of cute and fuzzy, but that's how they start. Now, what does the bee do after that? After it's, can I say born? After it comes out of its cell, you know what its first job is? I think I like to tell my children this, and I'd like to tell you this too. I think it's very important. The very first job for that bee, after it comes crawling out of its cell, out of its little bedroom, its first job is to turn around, go back, and clean out its bedroom. Isn't that a good lesson for all of us? First thing to do when you get out of bed in the morning is to clean up your bedroom, right? All right, that's the very first job of a bee. But then they have other jobs. As they grow older, they help with different things in the hive. Here you can see two bees. And looky here, you see the honey down there in the honeycomb? Isn't that cool? Not exactly sure what's happening. Probably feeding each other. Sometimes they feed each other. Sometimes they clean each other. They communicate back and forth. And so that's a job of a bee, to help keep the hive clean, to help feed the other bees. What's this bee doing? Does anybody know? Yeah. It kind of looks like it, and he may be guarding, but there's something else he's doing. He's not fighting, no. Looks like it. Looks funny, right? He's got his back end way up in the air. If this wasn't just a picture, this bee would be doing something very interesting. He puts his back end way up in the air, and his wings would be going. What do you think he's doing?
Dancing?
No, good guess. No, not getting honey. He's fanning. He's fanning. An interesting thing a lot of people don't realize. Bees, when they have a hive, they have to heat the hive. They have to cool the hive. It's very important for the babies in the cells to stay about 99 degrees. And so they regulate temperature in the hive. They huddle together and make heat. They all huddle together, and the bee, God made the bees with a special ability. They can, it's like they can unhook their wings, and they can flap their wings, but their wings don't move. And they do that. It's kind of like you shiver when you're cold. You shiver, and those muscles help create heat. The bees do the same thing. They huddle together, and they sort of shiver. They make their muscles go, and they can create heat, and so they can heat the hive. But especially in Mississippi, often it gets way too hot outside. And then they have a very important job, and that is to cool the hive. And so this bee is a part of running some air conditioning in the hive. He's fanning the hive, helping move air through. Now, they also fan because they pass scents around. They communicate by smell, so that he might be helping to pass some smell around. But he's probably fanning the hive. In fact, I just about said the bees are so smart, but God made the bees so smart because God is so smart that they know how to do air conditioning. Long before humans knew how to do air conditioning, they were air conditioning their hives. Do you know how they do it? Some bees carry water in, and they put water in these cells. They'll put water in there, and the other bees gather nearby, and they fan across the water. And you know what that does? It evaporates the water, and when water evaporates, it cools. And so they actually have been doing air conditioning in their hives for thousands of years. We humans are a little slow. We just figured it out in the last 100 or so, I guess. They also can regulate humidity in the hive. I find that amazing, what all the bees can do, what all God created the bees with the ability to do. So that's another job a bee might have. But bees also help guard the hive, and this would look like a guard bee. And often when I go out to my hives, right at the entrance, which usually the entrance is much bigger, but there'll be a lot of bees like this. And I think they're doing two jobs. They're fanning, but they're also guarding. Every bee that comes in needs to have the right smell, needs to have the smell of their hive, or else they don't let it in. If a mouse wants in, no way. If a bug wants in, they shouldn't let them in. That's part of the job of a bee. Last night we talked about pollinating. Here's a bee doing some pollinating. He's out gathering nectar. He's also gathering pollen. See here? God created the bee with a special group of hairs by his, it's kind of like his elbow on his leg, his knee, I guess. And you see all that pollen collected there? It's his pollen basket. He's got a whole bunch of pollen from the flower. He also has pollen all over him. See all that pollen? Makes you want to sneeze, doesn't it? So here's a bee collecting nectar and pollen. That's another job the bees have. Oh, here's a Here's an interesting picture. We haven't talked about this special bee yet. Do you see how these bees are all kind of circled around one bee? Do you know what that one bee is? That's the queen bee. There she is. If you've never seen a queen bee, there's your first glimpse of one. She's got a red dot on her. Some painter or some beekeeper said, "Oh, I want to mark this bee so I know what year she was born." And so he put a little dot of red paint on her. She wasn't born that way naturally. He also cut half of her wing off because he didn't want her to fly away. See that? But what are all the other bees doing? Is she giving instructions, you think? No. They're watching her. They're helping take care of her. So the queen bee, you know what job the queen bee has? Yes. Lay eggs, yes. We call her a queen bee. Actually, it might be more accurate to call her a mother bee. When you think of a queen, you think of a queen, you know, sitting on a throne and giving orders. That's not how the queen bee does. She's more like the mother bee, but her job is to lay eggs. And she has an extra long body. Let me see if I've got another picture. Yeah, here's another bigger picture of a bee. See how these bees are this long? And she's about 25% longer. She's got a long, slender body. And that is just perfect because with that long, slender body, she can walk along on a comb like this, and she can stick her abdomen, she can stick her bottom all the way down there and lay that little egg all the way at the bottom of the cell. She's made just perfect for that. Isn't that neat? Any of you guys have chickens at home? You've got chickens? Okay. How many chickens do you have? How many at your house, you know? Do you have a lot? Is a chicken barn full?
No.
You've got six?
About 16.
16, okay. 16 chickens. About how many eggs do you get every day? About 10. So most of your chickens lay one egg a day, and maybe there's six of them that are slackers, and you wish they'd lay an egg too, right? All right. Yeah, we've got about 80 chickens at our place, and we get about 70 eggs, so it's about the same ratio. We wish they'd all lay one every day, but they don't quite. But most of them lay one egg every day. How many eggs do you think a queen bee will lay in a day? 3,000. You're actually really close. A queen bee can lay up to 2,000 eggs in one day. Often when I ask people, they'll say 5, 15, or 20. But a queen bee can lay thousands of eggs. That's all she does every day. Just lay eggs, lay eggs, lay eggs. I wish I could teach our chickens to be a little more like a queen bee. If I could somehow mix our queen bee and a chicken together, I'd have a real egg production, wouldn't I? But I haven't figured that out yet. But she can actually lay her body weight in eggs every day. Imagine that. If your mom, well, I don't want to say how much she weighs, but if she has 150 pounds and she has 5-pound babies, she could have 30 of them in a day. That would be absolutely amazing. Where does all that come from? Well, God made the queen bee in a very special way, and I'm thankful he has. I'm sorry, that may have not been the best illustration there. You know what else is neat about the queen bee? When she lays an egg, she can lay a girl egg, an egg that's going to be a little girl bee, or she can lay a boy egg, an egg that'll turn into a boy bee. And it's kind of like she can do either one. She can decide. Wouldn't that be neat? If your mom's going to have another baby and you guys all say, "Hey, Mom, let's have a girl this time." She'd say, okay, I guess we'll have a girl. And so she'd have a girl. Wouldn't that be neat? How many of you would like that? You could wrestle with your siblings and you'd say, "Okay, well, we want boys this time." So, okay, well, let's have a boy. Wouldn't that be neat? I don't know. It might make a lot of conflict if we had to choose. And if your house was a hive, boys, by the way, there would probably be about 9 girls and 1 boy because there's a lot more worker bees than boy bees. So maybe you wouldn't want your family to work like that. Let me show you something else that's interesting. I find this fascinating. And this may be more for your parents than for your children, but when the queen bee lays an egg, if it's a fertilized egg, if it comes with a sperm from a dad, that makes a girl bee. Do you know how she makes a boy bee? She lays an egg that's not fertilized, and then that becomes a boy bee. Now, that's very unusual. What that means is all the boy bees have a mom, but no dad. All the girl bees have a mom and a dad. Wouldn't that be kind of strange? If you like genealogies, moms and dads, here you can start thinking about honeybee genealogies. If you happen to be a drone bee, a boy, you would only have a mom and no dad. But your mom, since she's a female, has a mom and a dad. So you would have a grandma and a grandpa. Wouldn't that be neat? But only one mom. But when you get to your grandparents, of course, your grandma has a mom and a dad. But your dad only has a mom, so you would have two great grandmas, but only one great grandpa. And you can see how this starts to get a little strange as we go up through, but all the dads only have a mom. Wouldn't the family reunions be a little unusual if it looked like this? Something I find fascinating, I've always loved math. If any of you have heard of the Fibonacci sequence, curious if that's a word. Okay, we've got a couple math geeks here, good. Look here, we've got 1, 1, 2, 3, 5. Who wants to guess what the next generation would have? 8, yeah. It's each number is the sum of the two beneath it. A fascinating sequence that shows up in nature. The amount of petals on flowers, the amount of rows of corn, the rows in your corn and on pine cones, and it shows up even in the beehive. I think that's, I don't know if God maybe just smiles sometimes at all these little secrets he pops in at unusual places, but we were talking about the lifespan of a bee, and we got sidetracked here a little bit with the queen and the drones. By the way, what does the life work of a drone look like? Do you guys know? So we have worker bees, we have queen bees, and we have the drone bees. What are the drones good for? Well, they mate up with the queen, but not with the queen in the hive. The queen bee, when she's born, she flies out and is mated in flight for life, and then she comes back and she lives in the hive the rest of her life laying eggs. Any drones in the hive are her sons, and so she wouldn't mate with them. That wouldn't be good for the species. So the drones, they fly out and mate with other queens from other hives. That's how God created the bees in a beautiful way, I think, to keep the genes, the gene pool spread out, and I think it's amazing. But the life of a drone, you boys might think, is absolutely wonderful. All the drones do is they fly around with their friends looking for queens, and they come back to the hive, and they eat honey, and they don't do any work. Sounds pretty awesome, doesn't it? Yeah. You know what happens to the drone bees about this time of year? When it starts to get cold, all of a sudden the worker bees, all the girl bees, say, hey, these guys, we don't need babies anymore for the winter because it'll be too cold. They don't have any purpose here. They're not helping. You know what happens? They all get kicked out of the hive, and they go outside, and they shiver, and they die. That's kind of a sad way to end. How many of you would like to be a drone bee about right now? I don't think I would want to either. You better. Maybe there's a lesson there from the boy bees. So we talked about the worker bees and what they do. Now, I've got some important questions for you. You've learned a little about all the different responsibilities of a bee in its life, and you've learned about the three kinds of bees in the hive: queen bee, worker bee, drone bee. Which is most important? Queen bee. What were you going to say? Queen bee? Does anybody think a different bee? Well, let me tell you something. If you have a queen bee and you don't have other bees, you've got a problem. Because that queen bee, all she knows how to do is lay eggs. She doesn't know how to get honey out. She doesn't know how to clean the hive. She doesn't know how to protect the hive. In fact, she doesn't even usually feed herself. If you have just a queen bee, it's going to die really soon. So that wouldn't work so well, would it? So which bee do you think is the most important? The girl bee, the worker bee. All right, worker bees. We need lots of worker bees. 99% of the bees in the hive are usually worker bees. So if I give you a worker bee and put a worker bee in the hive, how long do you think that would last? Well, worker bees can't lay eggs. Worker bees can't fertilize queen bees. Worker bees can gather honey, but a worker bee in the busy time only lives about 6 weeks. And a worker bee by itself will only live about 3 days. So that's not going to work out so well, is it? So which bee do you think is the most important? Must be the drone bee, right? You know what? If we have a drone bee all by itself, it doesn't feed itself. It doesn't protect the hive. It doesn't lay eggs. It doesn't work. It's not going to live long at all. Maybe a day or two. That's not going to work either. So which one is the most important? None. So you're saying bees aren't important? I like that answer better. They all are. Which is most important? They all are. Our family lived in Grenada for a time, and while I was there, I had some bees in it's a little island down in the Caribbean, and I taught the students there at the school about some of the bees, and they started getting excited about bees, and one boy came in the next morning, and he said, Pastor Marvin, they called me Pastor Marvin there. He said, Pastor Marvin, he said, I caught 3 bees last night. I'm going to start a hive. Doesn't work. You need a lot more than 3 bees. He caught 3 worker bees, but 3 worker bees are no good without a queen bee, and a queen bee is no good without a drone. So what's most important? They all are. We need them all. Now, we talked about a lot of different jobs. We talked about cleaning out the cell. We talked about guarding the hive. Which of those jobs do you think is most important? Good, you're learning all of them. I think all of the jobs are important because if nobody's laying eggs, we've got a problem. If nobody's collecting nectar, we've got a problem. If no one's guarding the hive, we've got a problem. And it's amazing, somehow in the bee colony, God created the bees where people have done studies on this. Scientists have gone in, and I don't know how they do this, it must take hours and hours, but they go in and they try to take out all the young bees because usually the young bees are mostly cleaning the hive and feeding the babies and things like that. But they take out all the young bees. And do you know what happens? The bees that, older bees that have moved on to other jobs, when they sense that there's a missing group, they go back to caring for the young. So it's not like at certain ages you have to do this and you have to do this. Somehow in the hive they figure out, we've got a shortage here, and they move and meet the need. Or if you catch all the foragers, take all the foragers, all the ones that are out flying around collecting nectar, if you somehow steal all them from the hive and you just have young bees in there, you know what happens? There's other bees saying, hey, nobody's collecting nectar. Or they don't say it, but somehow it seems like they think it. And they'll start flying out and collecting nectar. They see a need and they meet it. I think that's just incredible how God created the bees to do all these things. So which job is most important? All of them, right? Which bee is most important? All of them. We need them all. Which of you is most important? Who in the church here this morning is most important? Good. Everyone. When we all do our job, we're all needed. I thought maybe you would say your preacher is most important. He's important, right? Well, sure he is, but so is everybody else. So are the children. So are you guys. We all have a part to play. And when we do our job, it works beautifully, just like the bees when they work together and do their jobs. I have one more lesson I'd like to discuss with you this morning. Yesterday, I told you, I want to ask, see if you remember. What happens to a bee after it stings you? A honeybee. Oh, yeah, you all remember. What happens? They die. Yeah. When you think about that, you think, if you were a bee and somebody was messing around your hive, would you sting them if you knew you were going to die? Why would a bee do that? Are they just that mean? protect the other bees. It seems like it. It seems like it. You know, when the bees, for about in the summer, the bees are flying out and collecting nectar, and they literally work themselves to death for about 6 weeks. About 6 weeks old, a bee will die because it works itself to death. It's out there collecting honey, and just think, if it's an old bee about to die, don't you think that bee should say, hey, you know what? I've collected a lot of honey. I think I should just stay in the hive and eat this honey now, shouldn't I? Why should I keep flying out and risking my life to collect more honey? Why do they do that? Why would a bee keep flying, keep collecting nectar until finally on its last trip, it doesn't make it home and it falls in the grass somewhere and it dies? Why wouldn't it just stay back in the hive? To make food for other people. It's like somehow it cares for the next generation of bees. It cares for the others. Good. You know what else bees do when they come back? Somebody said that you thought maybe the bee was dancing on that picture. Did you know that bees dance? Did you know that? You know, bees can't talk like you and I can talk, but they do communicate. They communicate a lot through smell, but they also communicate with a dance. How many of you knew about that? It's called a waggle dance. Doesn't that sound like fun? Would you like to see me do a waggle dance? I figured you would. I don't think I'll do that this morning, but let me show you what it looks like. I'll explain it to you. A waggle dance is, you can't see one on a picture doing a waggle dance, of course, but let me just, you can imagine all these bees. Imagine a bee flies out 2 miles away. They can fly that far away, and he finds a field of clover. Oh, delicious clover, lots of nectar. He fills his tummy full. He makes a beeline back. Did you know that's why we call it a beeline? He makes a straight line back to the hive. And he gets here, and he starts unloading. He starts giving up his nectar. But he doesn't just turn around and say, man, I'm going back to get some more good stuff. No, he stops in the hive here, and he'll gather some bees around him, and he'll do a waggle dance. Now, a waggle dance, if you can imagine, let's pretend it was this bee right here. A waggle dance. They waggle their back end. That's why it's called a waggle dance. So they wiggle their back end while they walk across the frame. So this bee here, if it was doing a waggle dance, it would go like this. It would go about maybe from about here, and it would go. And then it would turn around, come back, and it would do the exact same thing. And then turn around, come back. Might do it 3-4 times. I've often watched them do it. Now, what in the world is that about? Well, it's telling each other three things scientists have discovered, and maybe more, but three that we know of. First of all, the direction, the angle that it goes across the honeycomb tells the bee that when they go out and fly, they need this angle from the sun. So the angle tells them which direction they need to go. In other words, it's that way because the sun is up here and I'm going this way. Somehow they know that. Isn't that amazing? The second thing is how far it travels while it waggles tells the bees how far away it is. So if they do a really short waggle dance, it might just be right across in the neighbor's yard or something. If they do a real long one, it might be 2 miles away. And the last thing is how excited he is as he does this, and the amount of times he repeats it gives him an idea of the quantity and quality of what's out there. Isn't that amazing? God created the bees to communicate in such an amazing way. It'd be like, how far is Harrisburg from here? Probably 100 miles. What's something that's 50 miles from here that people know about? Bedford? Okay. If I would, when you think of the size of the bee and the 2 miles, the distance they travel, it's like me as a 5'5" guy. I like to say I'm 5'6", but I'm really 5'5". As a pretty short guy, but if I would go running out the door and I'd run down the street and I'd run down the road and I'd run the whole way to Bedford, and I'd have to have an ambulance pick me up because I can't run that far, but I would go the whole way to Bedford and I'd be looking around Bedford and I'd find this place where they have the best hamburgers I've ever had. Imagine that? And I'd eat a big hamburger, and I'd run all the way back here, and then I'd come up here in front of you guys, and I would... and you would watch me really close, and then you would go out the door, and you would start running down the road, and you would run across the streets and alleys, and you would run the whole way to Bedford, and you would find that exact same hamburger place. How do they do that? Well, an amazing God taught them how to do that. But why do they do that is the bigger question I wanted to ask. Why would you want to tell each other where the really good stuff is? Well, again, it's like they're looking out for the others in the hive. I've been amazed by this as a beekeeper, as I watch the bees, and I see them stinging, even stinging me, which I don't like, but it's still, I kind of amazed. I'm like, wow, you gave your life. You know, God, Jesus said that greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friend. You know, it's sort of like greater love hath no bee than this, when a bee lays down his life for its friend. I don't like that he stung me, but I'm really impressed by his commitment to the hive. It's like God put in the bees this thing that they ask themselves, and they're committed to doing whatever is best for the hive. They work themselves to death, bringing back honey, not so they can sit in the hive and eat it and play shuffleboard and things like that. No, they work themselves to death. Maybe that was pointed. For whatever's best for the hive. That's the lesson I would like to leave with you children this morning, and we're going to keep talking about it with the moms and dads. But wouldn't it be fun to be a part of a hive where there were thousands and thousands of people, and they all wanted what's best for the hive? That's what the bees get to be a part of, and we kind of do too. Thank you for your attention this morning. You can go back to your seats now. Come back this evening, and we'll have another lesson for you tonight. I hope your parents have been listening in. I feel like you were. And I hope you're listening beyond just the teachings about the bees and thinking about what may be the principles that we're supposed to be learning here. Have you ever considered that your church here is sort of, could be considered a hive? Each bee fills a position, fills a need. Each person also, each member, as Christ refers to us, is a part of the body. Turn with me this morning, if you will, to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. This is probably such a familiar passage, I wouldn't even have to read it. And maybe I want to just point out a few things, but in verse 12, it starts or continues, "As the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit are we all baptized into one body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether we be bond or free, and have been made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many." And when I meet people, often a question I get asked is, well, how many bees do you have? And there's enough cantankerous in me that I usually say something like, well, I think it's 362,534. At least that's what it was the last time I counted, which is not true. But the reality is beekeepers don't count by bees. And I know there's some people here, I found out last night, who grew up in beekeeping families. What do we count by? Hives. So the correct question, if you want to be correct, is how many hives do you have? And the correct answer to that is I have around 60 or 70 hives. I'm just a little bigger than a hobby beekeeper, but But that's quite a few, and you know, with 40,000 bees in each, that's a lot of bees. But the question is, we don't treat them as individuals. We the word they use is superorganism. So we talk about hives and beekeepers. If I'm talking with a friend, I'll say, "Well, that one's really hot." Well, what does that mean? Well, that means you don't want to get close to it. The bees are really defensive. So it's fascinating. I can have five hives in a row, and I open this one up, and they come, you know, out at me, and they're all over. And I wear a suit, but you know, they're all over. And I open the next one, and they're just as docile as can be. And you know, you wave your hand over it, which is the worst thing to do when you have an open lid. Like that's the big no-no, you know. And you do that, and they're just that's how you prove that you've got a really docile hive. You open it up, maybe don't even smoke them. And you just like wave your hand. Look at this one. Wow, this is amazing. They're not doing anything. But each hive has like its own genetics because they all have the same mom. So they're all sisters and a few brothers in there. And so it makes sense that they are that way. But we treat them that way. And so I'll say, well, I've got a couple sick hives on this yard, you know. And what I mean is I'm not talking about individual bees, but I'm talking about the body, the superorganism. And so they all sort of, I characterize them all the same because they function as a group. And so you'll have some hives that are really good honey producers, just amazing. And just this past week, I was wrapping up the bees and kind of finishing them up, tucking them in for winter, I say. But just going through them one last time. And I opened one hive, and it was full of honey. I had just extracted some honey like 2 weeks before, and they had filled it all back up. Like, wow. I opened up the next hive, it was dry. Like, what are you guys doing? You're neighbors, but you know, and it's genetics, and other things can happen, but they can vary so much from one to another. But the characteristics, and what I'm saying is, we treat them as a body. And Jesus, in his word, says, the body is one and hath many members. And I'm here at the Tyrone Hive this morning. And I wonder what Christ says about the Tyrone hive. Like, well, that's a hot hive. Or, and he say, wow, look at, you know, they're really fruitful. Or, boy, it seems kind of dry. Or, how is the hive this morning? And the question I want you to consider, just like the lesson for the children is, this question, is this your question? Is this your motto, like the bees, that say, whatever is best for the hive? Whatever is best for the hive, I believe, is a motto worth copying, worth living by. We could continue reading here about the foot and the hand, and which is most important. I think you know the answer to that. They're all necessary. The children answered that question already, didn't they? 1 Corinthians 12 reiterates it. But there, it's not a different value. The eye doesn't say to the hand, I have no need of thee. The head doesn't say to the feet, I have no need of thee. Nay, much more those bodies, members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary. Each one is important. Each one has a place when we all do our job. It's beautiful. But the reality is we need each other. Just like I couldn't take one or two bees and say, hey, I've got a hive. Let's see how this works out. So it is with us. We need each other. God created church for us. It's for our good. We need to be a part. I realize maybe somewhere in you know, the communist country, there may be a single believer. And praise God, if someone, God speaks to them and they respond and they have no one around them that they know of that they can fellowship with, it is possible, I believe, to have a relationship with God alone. But it's not God's intent. It's not best. It's not God's plan. We need each other. Scripture's full of this. We talk of the ordinances. You know, how well would that go to practice the ordinances by yourself? I guess you could baptize yourself, take a shower. You could wash your feet. You could serve yourself communion, drink the bread. You could extend the right hand to fellowship, maybe. If you could kiss the mirror if you wanted. But, you know, that's ridiculous. Doesn't work. Not God's intent. Genesis 1, God created male and female in his image. It's not one or the other, but both reflect his image. And so we as a church are the bride of Christ together, not any one of us, but together. Ecclesiastes tells us two are better than one. If the one fall, the other can help him up. In adversity, the other can care. I know you know these things, so I'm not sure what all to share, but the Bible is full of verses about one anothering. I wrote them down. I'm not going to turn to each one, but I'm just going to tell you the phrase that goes with one anothering. The Bible tells us, love one another. Be devoted to one another. Honor one another. Accept one another. Instruct one another. Live in harmony with one another. Greet one another. Care for one another. Bear one another's burdens. Agree with one another. Serve one another. Bear with one another. Forgive one another. Submit to one another. Be kind and compassionate to one another. Encourage one another. Be humble to one another. To take and admonish one another. Offer hospitality one to another. Rebuke without partiality one another. Spur one another on to good works. Be honest one with another. Confess faults and pray with one another. And then it has a whole list of things not to do. Don't oppress one another. Don't cause another to stumble. Don't go to law against one another. Don't oppress one another. Don't slander one another. Do not complain against one another. Don't steal, cheat, or lie to one another. Have I sounded like a parrot? Did you know there was so much one anothering? We could probably spend an hour or hours look at each one of these. What does it mean to love one another? What does it mean to be devoted to one another? What does it mean to honor one another? I'm not going to this morning, but I just want to challenge you to one another. What's best for the hive? Look outside of my individual living by myself mentality and say, what is best for those around me? It's like in the Sunday school lesson this morning, when you see your neighbor's ox or ass fall in the ditch. I'm not exactly sure how that verse was. It said, don't hide, but help. You know, it didn't give enough specifics. It would be nice if it said a little more exactly. But you know what? Those principles really cover everything. Don't hide. Don't pretend you didn't see it. And then help. And what does help look like? Well, I guess God thinks we're smart enough to figure it out. Maybe we can use our imagination and figure out how to help. In Ephesians, it also lists the giftings. In Ephesians 4, it says he gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. We have different giftings, we have different responsibilities. But then he says why. He says, for the perfecting of the saints. Did you know that the gifts that are given, it never mentions that there's any benefit for myself? So the apostles aren't doing it for themselves. The pastors aren't doing it for themselves. The evangelists aren't doing it for themselves. The teachers aren't. It's not to benefit themselves, but it's for the perfecting of the saints. It's for the betterment of everyone else. For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. In other words, it's for the hive. Whatever's best for the hive. And sometimes we have these gifts and we say, wow, God has really gifted me, and we go build an empire with it, or we do something great. That, we miss the point. The gifts are for the hive. And so what is my attitude with what God has given me? There's a story, it's probably fictitious, I don't know, but of an elderly lady who meeked out a meager living by selling soft pretzels on a busy street corner in the city. And she was selling these pretzels every morning, every day for $1 apiece. And every morning, there was this wealthy businessman that passed by her stand, and he would always buy a pretzel, give her $1, but he would never take a pretzel. He didn't really like pretzels. He wasn't hungry for pretzels, but he appreciated her working and wanted to support her. And so every day he would pay her and not take the pretzel and continue on. And there was never any discussion about that. But finally one morning he came by and he gave her $1 and he was heading down the sidewalk. And she said, "Young man, come back here." He came back. He said, "I know you're probably wondering why I always, pay you for a pretzel and don't take it." She said, "Young man, I couldn't care less what you do with your pretzel, but I just needed you to know that my price went up to $1.25. Now, there's something in us that kind of yurks about that, right? What is it? Maybe it's the entitlement mentality. But easy to see in others, not so easy to see in myself. I want to challenge you as a hive here. Are you entitled to the blessings you receive here in the church? Do you deserve it? Do you deserve to be treated with respect and honor as you come in here? What do you deserve? First Corinthians 4, verse 7, Paul's talking to the church, and it's about, he talks about Apollos and different leaders and what they've received, but in verse 7 he says, he asks them a question. He says, "Who maketh thee to differ one from another?" Who makes you different one from another? He doesn't answer the question. I think the answer is obvious. Or I hope it is. Maybe we should answer it to make sure that you can answer it. Who makes you differ one from another? God does. And then he says, "And what do you have that you did not receive?" And again, he doesn't answer it.
Nothing.
What do you have that you have not received? Well, now, you worked hard for what you have, didn't you? Well, the correct answer is nothing. And he goes on to say, now if you did not, let me just read it so I say it right. "Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it?" Everything you have, you've received. Why are you acting proud about that? See, our attitude can be entitlement and pride, or it can be humbleness and gratitude. And I would sure rather be with the humble gratitude people than the entitled proud group. I want to illustrate something here this morning. And again, I won't apologize. I'm simple, I guess. And so I can't be complicated. But 4 score years. A reason of strength, if I asked you how long you expect to live, some of you may think 100, but the reality is 80 years is a pretty full life, right? So if we divide that up in 10 sections, we would have 8 years per section. So there's age 0 to 8, 9 to 16, 17 to 24, 25 to 32, 33 to 40, 40 to 48, 49 to 56, all the way to 80. You could say that's, normal life expectancy, right? Ages 0 to 8. What are you all good for in those years? We all come to the world the same way. Was it you said that last night? Just screaming, and that's about all we can do, right? We're not dressed. We're not fed. We are utterly helpless, totally dependent. Right, mothers? I see quite a few young children here. They come totally needy, right? But all of us older than 8 have experienced this. Actually, everyone's experienced at least a part of this. We all started out this way. What did we give the world during those 8 years of our life? Not much. What did we receive? Almost everything, right? Food, shelter, clothing, instruction. We grow older, ages 9 to 16. For most of us, that's kind of our schooling years. That's about the age that we do more of academic studies. And so most of you 9 to 16 are probably involved in some sort of schoolwork. It's a big part of your life right now, besides eating breakfast and supper and a place to sleep. But again, 9 to 16, most of you are still living at home. You're not paying the light bill. You're not paying the food bill. You're not even paying school tuition. And you go to school, and you're not teaching, right? You're the student. And so all day long, you're receiving, 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 right? Now, somewhere in here, children are starting to do jobs. You can set the table. You can clean your bedroom. You may get a little part-time job in the summer or evenings. But for the most part, it's still all coming in, right? 17 to 24, what happens to most of us during that time of life? Something changes, right? For a lot of us, the picture changes and it starts to look like this, right? And I was a little slow. I didn't quite get it in that stage. I was a little older, 24, 25, 26, somewhere. I have to ask my wife, and she's not here to help me. But you know, that's an important change that happens. This is maybe for the youth. I want to challenge you, youth. There is a radical change happens as you get to this age. You've been used to mom and dad taking care of me, teachers teaching me, Sunday school teachers teaching me. And even at this age, 17 to 24, yeah, you start leading songs, you might start teaching some Sunday school classes, but still the bulk of the weight of giving and serving often is carried by others. And all of a sudden you get married and it's wonderful, but you get up in the morning and maybe your wife doesn't do everything your mom did. I remember the first time I got sick. My mom would always, I would get strep throat, and so she would always make a soft-boiled egg and garlic toast, and she would cut it diagonal, and it would look like butterfly pieces on my, and she'd bring it up to my bed, and it was really important for me to drink, so she would have ginger ale and orange juice and water and Gatorade, and just all day long she'd be, pumping me, trying to keep me out of the doctor's office, and, you got to drink and eat your garlic toast, and isn't it such a nice butterfly? And I grew up with that, and I got sick after I was married. And I remember laying in bed, and I was sweating, and I was thirsty, and my wife didn't bring me any butterfly garlic toast. And she didn't even bring me a cup of water. Like, she just wanted me to die. And I was just, like, dying in the bedroom, and I was like, what in the world? Like, she doesn't even care about me. I said, honey, I'm thirsty. Could you please bring me a drink? And she brings me this little glass of water and sets it by my bed. I was like, oh my goodness, like, what has happened to me? That's a little crazy, isn't it? But something I didn't learn, unfortunately, till I was about this age, a friend told me about this idea. I was so used to being a receiver, 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 and I went into marriage thinking that my wife, my spouse, she was just going to give. I expected to come home every evening after work and, get foot rubs and pina coladas on the porch, And it just didn't happen like that. And I don't know what she was all expecting, but, you know, it didn't happen like that for her either. I wish she was here, she could tell you. But it was a shock to my life. And it's like, all of a sudden, there's just two of us in this house, and, like, the living room's messy. And, well, I mean, my mom always, she never left the house a wreck like this. And I didn't recognize I'm a part here, and that there's been a radical shift from receiving to needing to give. And so, sorry if there's anybody dating and excited about getting married or something, and I've just squashed your hopes. But the reality is, in order for there to be lots of receiving, there has to be lots of giving. And if this is going to work, men and women, as we grow up, we need to take responsibility and start to say, hey, I'm a grown person now. I need to give and give and give, and I might not receive back as much as it feels like I'm giving. Well, you can't, because there's lots of people who are receiving who can't give back. And then you get to the next stage of life, and for us, this was probably where the rubber really met the road, because my wife is amazing. But in this stage of life, and I see some of you here this morning, the picture starts to look like that, right? And you know, with a husband and wife, it can kind of be give and take. It sort of can be 50-50. I do things for her, she does things for me. But all of a sudden, our house changed, and it was full of little needy people. And it was only my wife and I here to give. And you just get to the end of the day, and you're like, I gave all day, and nobody did anything for me. And, you know, we tell mom and dad that, and they're just kind of like, oh, yeah. Yeah, welcome to the real world, sonny boy. What do you think we were doing the last 30 years? They're not always a lot of help. But all I'm saying, this whole little picture here, is to help people get a grasp that we have received much, and for that we must be grateful, but we need to be realistic, and you know what? Now it's my turn. I'm a full-grown adult, and I'm healthy, and you know what? I'm going to have to give and give and give and give to help make this work. I've been sitting in church for years and years, and people have been leading singing, and people have been teaching Sunday school class, and people have been preaching. If this is going to work, I'm going to have to take a part of that. People have cleaned the church every week for years and years, and I've been a blessed recipient of that, whether I recognized it or not. There were trustees that were fixing the lights and who knows what all. And I've enjoyed the benefits of that, not even knowing it, maybe not even recognizing it, but now it's my turn. Now it's your turn. And so we need to ask ourselves, what is best for the hive? A friend of mine says he's teaching his children, and I want to teach mine this too, but he just says, to see needs and meet them. Wow, my children would see needs and meet them. Whew, my shop would get cleaned up, and that'd be wonderful. I'd come home from the weekend, and all the tools got put away, right? But you know what? It's a beautiful thing when you can be a part of that. I remember, okay, wow. I'm gonna finish with a story, I guess, and we need to wrap this up. I'm sorry, this is going long. I was teaching school in Macon, Mississippi. I had just moved into the area and was teaching school there. And after school, I was leaving one evening, pulling out about 6 o'clock, and I was the last teacher to leave, and I was just locking the door, and I saw one of the church vehicles pulling in the driveway. I said, oh, somebody forgot a book or something. And so I waited till they parked, and I said, hey, you need in the school? I was just going to lock, but I can leave it unlocked. They said, oh, no, that's fine. Go ahead. You can lock it. I said, okay. And they're getting out of the vehicle with their children, and so what's going on? I was still kind of new in the community and didn't know if there was an event happening. They said, we noticed the flower bed here in front of school is needing some repair. We decided to come over this evening, and we're going to just freshen everything up. Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and we didn't do things like that in Pennsylvania. I'm picking on you guys, by the way. I couldn't believe it. I went out to my car, and I drove home. I said, is that how people in Mississippi work? Like, they're not trustees. They had no responsibility. They just while they were picking up the children or something, they noticed the flower beds were in disarray, and they came with the family to fix it. And they weren't going to tell anybody. I just happened to be there. Wow. I hope that sort of thing happens here at Tyrone all the time. Now, I'm not saying you go in and you say, oh, we're getting rid of these crepe myrtles, and you pour them out, and, you know, you plant Bradford pear or something. No, I'm not saying that. But when you see a need and you meet it, beautiful thing. Jesus said, by this shall all men know that you're my disciples when you have love one to another. And Jesus also taught us about feet washing. He says, happy are ye when you do these things. There's blessings that come when we learn to serve and give and care for each other as a body of Christ. Let's kneel for prayer.